show. You receive, but always want more. But the day is coming, the day is near, the day is coming. You know what I mean. The day is...
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Chuck Collins, a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies and director of IPS's program on inequality and the common good. He's the co-author of several books, including Economic Apartheid in America, a primer on economic inequality and security, The Moral Measures of the Economy, and Wealth and Our Commonwealth, which he co-wrote with Bill Gates Sr. He's the co-founder of Wealth for the Common Good, a network of business leaders, high-income households, and partners working together to promote shared prosperity and fair taxation. His latest book just out is 99 to 1, How Wealth Inequality is Wrecking the World and What We Can Do About It. Welcome to Background Briefing, Chuck Collins.
Thank you, Ian. Great to be with you.
And your book, 99 to 1, How Wealth Inequality is Wrecking the World and What We Can Do About It. It's certainly wrecking the world, but here at home, the disparity in wealth is growing. And I am wondering why it is that America's capitalists, except for the few that you work with, are so callous. In many ways, they've blamed globalism on the downsizing of America. But I think, in all fairness, so much of the problems that we have in terms of the distribution of wealth in this country is simply that the elite are greedy and they don't really care sufficiently about their fellow Americans.
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing is a segment of that 1% that is very content to rig the rules in their favor, to rig the rules of the economy, tilt them in their favor, and then talk about these inequalities as if there's some kind of disparity based on deservedness and effort. And it's just a very cruel hoax, really. And it has nothing to do with individual effort and differences in that regard. It really is about how the rules of the economy have been rigged in a way that hurts some people and benefits others.
Well, also, they have created this myth, which the candidate of the 1%, if you will, Mitt Romney, is propagating, and he's going to obviously be beating the drum on this for the next 6 months, that the wealthy, who somehow or other shouldn't pay taxes anywhere near equal to what we have to pay, in fact, they pay less than half on carried interest, etc., which is what Mitt Romney's been playing, less than 15%. The average household pays 35%, the people who actually work for a living. This canard of the job creator is so pervasive, and thank God for this fellow Nick Hanauer, who did the talk for TED, which they didn't want to release, and I guess they were shamed into releasing it. What was your response to Nick Hanauer's talk?
Well, it was marvelous, you know, and he is like a lot of our Wealth for the Common Good people. He understands that wealth is a function not just of the individual effort. I mean, it has something to do with that, but it has a lot to do with the society, the commonwealth, the institutions that that we build together that make individual wealth creation possible. And so, again, that the part of the myth or the hoax is, hey, these inequalities are a reflection of individual effort. Some people work hard and smart, and some people don't, and that's why we have inequality in America, as opposed to some people may have used their wealth and power to rig the rules of the game to get more wealth and power. That's the real story. And that's why Nick Hanauer and Bill Gates Sr. and some of our Wealth for the Common Good members, when they get up and say, you know what, I've been the beneficiary of a wonderful society that's made wonderful public investments that enable all of us to have a great opportunity, and I have an obligation to pay back the society that made it possible. That's why I should pay more taxes, and that's why a message like Nick Hanauer's is so important.
But in terms of job creation, Hanauer absolutely eviscerates the Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney propaganda of the job creator by pointing out that capitalists, the last thing they want to do is hire people. They only do hire people when they have to, and the reason they have to is because of popular demand for their product. And what he's saying is that it's not the billionaires who are the job creators in this country, it's a vibrant middle class with money in their pockets so that they can create demand and buy the products of these very short-sighted capitalists who don't seem to get the big picture.
You know, that's the fascinating thing, is that you hear people talking about, oh, the job creators, help the job creators, right? And that's why we should cut taxes for the wealthy. But then if you actually talk to the wealthy individuals who are job creators, they'll say, you know, taxes are not that important. What really matters is, you know, having customers with money in their pockets. What really matters is a healthy infrastructure of public investments that make the economy work well. It's not like people are sort of saying, oh, I want to pay a lot more taxes, but they're saying we have to pay some taxes, and if you're very wealthy and fortunate, then you should pay a lot of taxes, you know. And in the book 99 to 1, I make a distinction between the companies that are built to last, businesses that are in it for the long term, and companies that are built to loot, whose whole business model is about laying off workers, shedding jobs, getting other people to pay their taxes, getting other people to carry their load. And that's you know, the built-to-loot companies are the ones that we should be defending ourselves against in this current economy.
Well, Chuck Collins, your new book, of course, 99 to 1, How Wealth Inequality is Wrecking the World and What We Can Do About It. Give us a sense of what you're hoping to achieve with this book. Obviously, there is a tremendous asymmetry between people like you who are trying to get the message out and the enormous power of the media establishment. And clearly, we're going into an election year, and because the media has this sort of binary notion that there are two sides to everything, there's going to be a tremendous amount of investment into allowing Mitt Romney to appear as a credible candidate, even though, you know, in many ways he seems to be running on the notion that he's going to be the new CEO of America. The long and the short of it is that he'll be getting his message out. He's got billions of dollars behind him through super PACs. How do we get your message out and Nick Hanauer's message out?
Well, I think that we are... I think that the 99 to 1 lens or theme is very powerful, and we should be using that to make the contrast, you know, that there's policies that help Main Street, there's policies that help Wall Street. There are policies that help the 1%, there's policies that help everyone else lift the whole society, have an economy that works for everybody.
Prior to this election, of course, there'll be a kind of referendum in Wisconsin, and there again, the 1% are pouring money in. This woman that was caught on videotape telling Governor Scott Walker there that she wants him to make the state a right-to-work state, and she's put up half a million dollars at least to defend his recall. So that's kind of a precursor, and then you'll have the big election where billions will be spent by both sides. What's the formula, though, for the guerrilla movement on the side of the 99%, the ones who don't have super PACs?
Well, you know, starting now and into the fall, we should at every opportunity point out to anyone who's willing to listen that the 1% is trying to, you know, has captured our democracy and is trying to use their money to further cement their power and control. And we should be offended by the, that a couple hundred multimillionaires and billionaires are hijacking our democracy, buying attack ads, subjecting all of us to kind of a vile politics. So I think it's a really good opportunity to point out, hey, look at when this is what happens when the 1% has, you know, almost 40% of all the wealth of the nation and 23% of all the nation's income, and they use their wealth to expand their wealth. This is what it looks like. This is what a plutocracy looks like and feels like. And that that should be offensive to all of us, and we should push, use it as a chance to push back and you know, pass ordinances like the Move to Amend ordinance to repeal the Citizens United decision and just clamp down on money and promote policies that like taxing the wealthy, taxing the 1%, that will actually reduce these extreme inequalities.
But just in terms of your book, Chuck Collins, the book is really a handbook in many ways to get motivated, to get informed, and to get activated. The chapters are, you know, coming apart at the middle, who is the 1%, how the 1% rigs the rules of the economy, a life of the 99%, the Wall Street inequality machine, how inequality wrecks everything we care about, how wealth inequality crashed the economy, the sleeping 99% giant wakes up, reversing the inequality death spiral, bold rule change to break up concentrated wealth, and the conclusion, prospects for greater equality. That just gives you a just sort of general idea. But, I mean, I take it you're trying to both educate and activate, right?
Absolutely. And I'm actually one of those people who thinks we can reverse these conditions. You know, yes, I know we're up against huge, powerful forces and wealthy individuals who have whole media empires at their disposal. But, you know, there is a huge awakening happening in the land. People are, the polls are showing. People are like, see how these inequalities are damaging everybody's prospects for having a good life. That there is an awakening within the 1%. There are actually these allies stepping forward, the patriotic millionaires and Wealth for the Common Good and others. That the 1%, that the Wall Street juggernaut doesn't hold all the cards, and that if we organize and push forward policies, we can transform our country just as we did, 90 years ago, the first Gilded Age, 1910, 1912. You can think 100 years ago, we probably in the United States were as discouraged as ever about the possibilities for democracy, and yet social movements emerged and rural populists and the urban labor movement, the women's movement, other movements in the 20s and 30s really pushed to change the rules of the economy. And in the end, it had a powerful effect. So it's totally, we kind of know what the laws need to be changed. We know what the drift of public policy is, and it's really just a matter of kind of creating an organizing, you know, campaign and joining up with efforts to change this. So I'm hopeful that we can reverse these extreme inequalities.
So just in closing, though, do you think that there is a way to make this a moral movement? After all, it was moral movements that brought about some of the great change in the United States, getting rid of slavery, for example. On the religious right, you have the prosperity gospel. You've got these preachers, these televangelists like Osteen, who are saying God doesn't want you to be a whiner, God wants you to be a winner. And they're essentially agents of the plutocrats in suggesting that somehow we can all win the lottery and that there's a level playing field. Meanwhile, of course, he's taking a lot of money from working people who can ill afford to give it. Is there, do you think, a possibility of tying what you're trying to do into a broader moral movement?
Oh, I think it's already happening. And if you... Within the religious congregations and communities, I'm actually here in Manchester, New Hampshire, speaking at a religious congregation tonight. This conversation is in a whole different place than it was 2 years ago. People understand these extreme inequalities are a moral issue. The fact that there are all these young people who feel trapped with tens of thousands of dollars in debt, that there's millions of Americans who see no pathway out of poverty, that the middle class dream and ideal has collapsed and imploded for many people. Congregations, those are the people sitting in the pews. They're not whining. They just want to have a fair economy where the rules aren't stacked against them. And so I think that moral voice is part of this emerging movement, the 99-to-1 movement, and the We Are the 99% movement. All of those things will have huge positive impacts. So it's, you know, the Occupy movement unleashed a moral story about what's happened in the last 30, 40 years in our country and how to reverse it. So I think that's the way forward for sure.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Chuck Collins.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Chuck Collins, who's a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies and director of Institute for Policy Studies Program on Inequality and the Common Good. He's the co-author of several books, including Economic Apartheid in America, A Primer on Economic Inequality and Insecurity, The Moral Measure of the Economy, and Wealth and Our Commonwealth, which he co-wrote with Bill Gates Sr. He's the co-founder of Wealth for the Common Good, a network of business leaders, high-income households, and partners working together to promote shared prosperity and fair taxation. And his latest book just out is 99 to 1, How Wealth Inequality is Wrecking the World and What We Can Do About It. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Chris Scheid. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.